Welcome to the Heart of Dating podcast. Hey, it's Kate. I'm so glad you could join us this week as we try to untangle the ever so ambiguous world of dating as a Christian. Over here on Heart of Dating, we get real as we answer some tough questions and uncover transformative ways to approach Christian dating. Oh, and you better believe we have some laughs along the way, because last time I checked, the struggle is hashtag real. You know what I'm saying? Now, let's get to the heart of the matter. Hey guys, welcome back to the Heart of Dating podcast today. I'm your host, Kate Warman, and friends, I have the biggest smile on my face because Thank You for Rejecting Me is finally in the world. You guys, it is here. It is here. It is here. What is even happening? I am beside myself. This is my first book, and it is filled with my darkest, most painful stories that I painfully wrestled through to reclaim a new and powerful understanding of myself and of God. It's a book on finding yourself, on reckoning with your past pain. It's a book to unmask and heal the ways you self-reject so you can reconnect with yourself. It's a book about finding more of yourself and more of God through the pains of your past so you can transform them into purpose. It's about healing and finding new tools to face rejection in the future. Because trust me, you guys, it will come back again. But here's the catch. This time, you can be more prepared. And also, this is not just a book for people dating or someone with a laundry list of dating experiences and history. Have you ever told yourself insidious lies? Have you ever rejected yourself from an opportunity before another person even had the chance? Have you ever found yourself drowning in insecurity and crippling body shame? Have you ever been betrayed by a friend or someone you loved and found yourself fighting to figure out how to trust again? Have you ever put yourself out there, whether in work, a job, or in dating, and had the door slammed in your face? Have you ever been horribly abused, whether sexually, physically, or emotionally? Have you dealt with overwhelming shame that suffocated the life out of you? Have you ever been bullied or left out or felt like the misfit around others? Were you suddenly abandoned by a family member or someone close to you? Or have you ever found yourself wondering where God is within all of the pain? Friend, if even one of the above relates to you, then this book is for you. When I wrote this book, I thought about the person who might read it and feel comforted, like they were finally seen and could feel less alone on their journey. I pictured them turning to the final pages, feeling more equipped, healed, and empowered. I hope it's a book you can see yourself in. And I hope it's a book you can gift to your friend when you don't know how to comfort them. You see, every rejection has redirected me to something greater, and I know it will do the same for you. Now, if you listen to this podcast and want to support this ministry, would you consider ordering my first book right now? It is available wherever books are sold. Oh my gosh, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Walmart, Target, all the things, you guys. In fact, you can get an Amazon Prime to your house and start reading it tomorrow, okay? Also, there is even an audio version that is full of emotion and expression because it's narrated by me. In fact, it's my favorite thing. And I want to encourage you, if you like this podcast, you will love the Audible version. So go ahead and snag that right now. I just can't wait. I am now unashamedly going to scream this book from the rooftops, and it would mean so much to have you support me in that. Okay, well, on book launch week, with my book being on rejection and all, it felt so fitting to do an episode on heartbreak. Dun, dun, dun. So today, my amazingly good and beautiful girlfriend, Elise Murphy, came on Heart of Dating, and we had such a deep conversation about healing from heartbreak and learning how to love again. Elise Murphy is a writer, speaker, and influencer who is committed to using her platform to have authentic conversations and share meaningful moments that inspire people to live up to their God-given calling. She's an oversharer and a people pleaser and will probably get distracted mid-conversation, but she's doing her best to live a healthy life, body, soul, and spirit, and point them to Jesus. And she's okay if that's a bit messy. In fact, these days, she kind of likes it messy. In a world that is desperate to be seen, she's on a mission to be known, and she wants to take everyone with her. She grew up as a pastor's kid in Sydney, Australia, and after graduating from Hillsong Leadership College, wrote her first book called Confessions of a Church Kid. The book is a memoir about the good, the bad, and the ugly of growing up in church and is now being updated for republishing soon. The candid conversations continued, and her passion to have them, when she moved to Los Angeles in 2013 to pursue ministry and found a whole new world of life and its lessons along the way. She's currently in the process of writing her second book as a result. As she's continued to do what she's always done, inspire people in their life and challenge them in their faith, her influence has expanded into media. Elise is now the co-producer and host of On a Lighter Note with Lightworkers and works with media outlets to create content that will help people find hope and have honest conversations about faith, health, and relationships. She's also currently working with Christine Kane and Propel to launch Propel Girl later this year. The method has changed, but her message is still the same. Your mess isn't too messy for His grace. I love Elise. We had so much fun doing this conversation. She is just my girl, and I love it because we actually met in the wake of a heartbreak, so could not be more timely. You guys are just going to love this conversation. I can't wait for you to hear it, and don't forget to go grab my book right now. Thank You for Rejecting Me. Transform pain into purpose and learn to fight for yourself. Available wherever books are sold. All right, let's get into this combo. Oh my gosh, we have Elise Murphy on the podcast.
What? Finally, I've been trying to get you to get me on this thing and for forever.
I know. Finally. Wait, we need to tell everyone the first day we met and what you said on that night. Please reveal that.
Oh my gosh, best friends forever. Yes. I think we said a lot that night, so I don't know what I can share.
Maybe not.
It was one of those
things.
Nights. All girls listening know exactly what we're talking about when you have one of those nights and you meet your new best friend.
Exactly.
But we got set up. It was like a blind date for friends.
It was, yes.
And we got set up by our friend Janet, and you met me at our friend's restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was best friends forever. What was the specific thing that I said to you?
Oh, you said something about like, I'm going to be on your podcast or you're going to have something
I said that 100%. Yes. Which makes me sound so opportunistic, right? So narcissistic, at least.
No.
But I remember being like, we had so much to talk about. And then you were like, oh my gosh, I was just talking about this. Or then like, you would say something and I was like, I was just talking to someone about this. And we're like, okay, we need to either start our own podcast or I'm going to be on your podcast. This is a friendship forever kind of thing. It was love at first sight.
And I was like, we literally could have saw some of the personal details, probably recorded that dinner, and it would have been an awesome podcast.
Literally, there was tears, there was laughter, there was wine. It was absolutely incredible.
Wine flowing. It was probably like 3 hours long. Like, I think I was invited to a game night, and like, we were there for so long that I texted the person after. I was like, I'm sorry. Yeah, we totally did. I love it. We also, because I think this is so funny, we also bonded over heartbreak. And
yes, we did. We bonded over boys and it just kind of happened. And I remember, I think you were going through something at the time and my story very much lends itself to heartbreak. Which, what? That's so sad, isn't it? Yeah, my story is all about heartbreak. Like, duh, everyone's story has a moment of heartbreak in there. But I just remember meeting you and I had heard about you. I had obviously seen the podcast before, but then meeting you, we immediately bonded. And I think just you meet friends sometimes when both of your lives, it's the right time for you guys to meet. I do wonder if we'd met in circles before. I don't know if it would have been the same connection. I think that timing is everything. We literally sound like someone's like, hey, how did you meet your partner?
Exactly. Like, well. We're telling our meet cute right now, okay? This is
our meet cute.
Cameron Diaz, Jude Law, come on.
Can I be Cameron Diaz though? Because, you know, fine. That was always me as a kid. I was always like, I'm the wife. You have to be the husband. And they're like, why do I have to be the husband again? I'm like, because I'm always the wife. I was clearly a great friend as a kid. Yeah, I had to learn a couple of things. But we did. We bonded over heartbreak. And the rest is history. And you just need good friends when you go through tough moments in life that actually understand and aren't just quick to say, don't talk about that anymore. Like, let's not talk about sad things. You know, I've had those friends in the past that can't be there in those moments. And I think that those are the true, I hate the word seasons, but I'm going to use it. Those are the seasons that you really do find out your people. And yes. I think we found we found our people that night.
We found our peoples. And I believe what you're saying so deeply about like the right timing and God really bringing people together in the right timing. Because as you said that, I mean, it was after my last breakup, which people on the podcast know, I went through a breakup in September of 2020 and we met literally the next month. And yeah, and girl, what you actually just said was reminding me of something that really, I actually do believe that God brings people into our life in a specific time for a specific reason. 8 years ago, I was going through an abusive relationship and I remember that ended, and then I very sadly dislocated my shoulder falling down a staircase. That was a bummer and really painful.
That's a Kate Woolman special, ladies and gentlemen.
Literally. I mean, but literally in the worst moment of my life. And then let's just on top of that, dislocate your shoulder and be in the hospital. Like, great. Amazing. Needless to say, someone told me at church that weekend, like, hey, there's actually a girl at your office who's a Christian. And so I remember walking in on Monday with my sling because of the dislocated shoulder and running up to this girl and being like, oh, you're a Christian? Oh my gosh. And it was this hilarious moment because I worked in fashion and she came over that night and she helped me with groceries. Come to find out, she lived across the street from me in Manhattan, which is unheard of. And I had told nobody about a lot of the things that were going on behind the scenes of that relationship. And that night she just felt prompted to be like, hey, I don't know what's going on in my heart, but I feel prompted to share a little bit of a situation I just went through with you. And girl, it was her story of basically abuse and manipulation in a relationship. And the crazy part about it is that we had been working together at the same office for 6 months. I saw her like every day. I just thought she was this cute Asian girl. And I believe that if we had been friends before that exact moment, I think we actually, it wouldn't have been the same. We almost would have enabled each other probably in those abusive relationships. So I believe that God does bring us friends like in divine moments like that, like he brought us together.
And I think that is so true. And I think that often what happens is like we can have a friend there, but we might not have bonded with them. And I don't mean like just bonding over brokenness and that be the thing that you think binds you together until you don't realize how to be healthy like as friends. I think that there are friends like that sometimes, which God has to then remove from our lives. But I do think there is something to be said for bonding with people at a certain time in your life when suddenly something in life has happened that has been either so traumatic or a lot of crisis, or you just hit a point in the road where you've got to be very honest with the people around you. And I think that sometimes there are friends that come along that you wouldn't have bonded with because you didn't know how to be that honest until suddenly you were forced into a situation like that. And I think, I'm not saying you and I wouldn't have bonded over anything else, but I think there was something special about that night because there was a very honest side of the conversation and it was filters off, you know, leave the filters at the door. And I think it was nice. All that to say, I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here, girl. And you're doing amazing things. I was so thankful Janet connected us. So I want everyone to find out, now that they know that we love each other, I want them to fall in love with you even more by getting connected to what you do. So share a bit about like who you are, what you do.
Oh, I would love to. Well, I am an Aussie chick that moved to LA 8 years ago and good times all around. And so I grew up in a pastor's home, a pastor's kid, and went to Hillsong Bible College and really have been wanting to do ministry since I was a little girl. I either wanted to do that or be Judge Judy, but my name's Elise, so that was going to be an issue. So decided against that. But I always wanted to be in ministry and worked for my dad and then moved to Los Angeles to be a part of a church here with Philip and Holly Wagner and was a pastor there on staff for a lot of years. And just this last year, you know, during a global pandemic or two, decided to come off staff there and focus on some doors that are opening in media. And I feel like I'm the only girl that moved to LA to be in ministry, not media, but as the good Lord would have it, you know, and I'm kind of doing media and I feel like I'm meant to do both, to be honest. And I think that isn't necessarily championed a lot, especially not for females. And it can be tough to want to do both. And I don't know if there's ever been a lot of room to do both, but I think that God is the God of and, not either or. And so in a season now where I'm trying to honestly just figure out what that looks like. What does it look like to be in media and ministry? How do you bridge the two worlds? And what does God have for me? So doing a lot of writing, work a lot with light workers, have a show with them, and just interviewed you on the show.
Yes, girl.
So it's kind of fun. We get to do each other's stuff.
And you just came out with this amazing devotional. I just have to call it out because we're talking about books today, you know? So let's talk about that.
Your book just came out. This is what I was just saying. It's so nice when you have friends that want to celebrate each other that aren't just worried about this is what I've got going on. But I remember it was such a sweet moment. I think it was last week, right before the Singled Out conference, which I spoke at, which was so cool to be able to do. You gave me the light, fun topic of toxic friendships and toxic relationships. I was like, thanks, Kate. Appreciate it.
It's like, you could talk about this, girl.
Yeah. You're like, hey, can you do toxic people? I was like, yeah, no, cool. Give dating to someone else. I love that for us. But I love having friends that, and you and I were going back and forth because right now, obviously, I'm in Australia for a couple of months just with my family visiting them. And so we were on the voice memo because if anyone knows Kate, they know how much she loves a voice memo text.
Oh, yes. All the voice memos.
But we were going back and forth because I had my devotional coming out. I had a Lightworkers show coming out. You had the Singled Out conference happening, as well as we were trying to set up a time for the podcast and then your book that just came out. Like, it was such a cool moment where I was like, oh man, it's so nice to have friends that have big worlds. And I think when you're surrounded by people that have big worlds, it helps you have more space to be able to do big things. And so I'm just grateful. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for the fact that you have friends that celebrate each other. And yes, I did. You just brought out a book. Thank you for rejecting me. And I just brought out a devotional. So woo-woo, combining the two, be rejected and then go to the Lord. So that's
praise God. And it's an Easter devotional. Also, they look pretty together. I'm not going to lie, because I have both like right by me right now. And I'm like, these, first of all, they match my house, like, because the devotional is light pink and my book has, you know, pink flowers on it. It's fine. And guys listening, you can still buy my book. Just own your masculinity. You can
own
buy
it.
A book with flowers. It's going to be fine. Okay,
I love everyone? A guy in pink. I love a manly guy that wears pink. We love that.
Yes, we love it. We do. Any guy who has ever seen my apartment is like, if they are like, this looks great, I'm like, see, you are a real man. I love it.
You are confident in yourself, sir. There is a lot of pink in Kate's house.
Yes.
And a lot of fur.
Exactly. But I'm so excited to celebrate both of us. And this is amazing. Yay, books. Like, this episode launches the day after the Thank You for Rejecting Me comes out. So I'm so excited.
How do you feel?
It is so many emotions. It is beautiful because, you know, a lot of people have already started to receive the book. And now, of course, everyone's going to be receiving it. So it's a lot of things. It was the most difficult, challenging, hard and beautiful process and rewarding process, because, you know, just writing on the light fun topic of rejection and going through in every area of life, not just heartbreak, which we were talking about today, but like literally all different rejections. So yes, everybody, that's so much fun. But it was so healing for me, honestly. And I'm just excited, you know. And we talked about this when we first met, but I went through heartbreak the end of 2020, and it was in that moment, the day after that breakup happened, where my publisher emailed me and was like, hey, Kate, you have to read your book on rejection one last time. I was like, I'm sorry, what? You know, like this moment where you're like, no. But what's so beautiful is I realized like God also had me write it for me, not just for everyone else. And so I'm so excited. Like, it gives me a new sense of excitement and empowerment to say like, hey, I actually needed these words. It helped me to heal from that heartbreak and that rejection and face the lies that were coming up for me. And so I'm so excited for other people to be able to do that, because I know that I wrote it, but I also know that it helped heal me, you know? So,
yeah. And that's so important, isn't it? Is that like, I don't think God does stuff on accident. And I believe we just talked about it in terms of friendship, but God is such a God of timing. And of course he knew that was going to happen. And what's so cool, say your book that I know will help thousands and thousands and thousands of people. The first person that helped was you. And I just think God's so kind like that. Like, he does that kind of stuff. And so I know when I went through, part of my story is I went through a divorce in ministry publicly, and that was its own form of rejection in so many ways, of rejection of not just being rejected by my husband in a sense that promised me forever, but then how do you be in ministry and be the woman that feels like I have a scarlet D of divorce on me? And that kind of rejection from what I'd known, and really seeing the people that wouldn't actually be able to handle it, even though in the church, and again, I love the church, I'm in it all the time, but we say we deal with things well, but we don't always deal with things well. You want to take singleness, for example, or dating, right, or shame or divorce or rejection. And we often in life, not just in church, but in society and in culture, we can say we deal with something well, but our actions say something very different. And so I think that as someone that has rejection as a part of my story in so many areas, one of the beautiful ways that God has healed me and brought me to my wholeness is by walking through every time I preached about it or spoke about it and didn't speak about a divorce that had happened 25 years ago when I was married again with five kids, but a divorce that I'd been through the year before when I had healed enough to talk about it from a place of health, but not healed about it to talk about it without emotion. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Oh, and I think the place that you found yourself, which is why you know it's going to help so many people.
Yes, man. And girl, okay, so we need to, you just said this too, and I want to know, we're going to talk about this. So you went through a divorce and you were working in a church, and I mean, you even just said it. I have this question written down that I want to present to us, but like, I mean, it is so hard. I feel, as you said that, what it brought up for me was like, I'm a dating coach and all these people are looking at me to how I date. And, you know, I didn't reveal, for me, nobody saw my relationship. So there's a difference in our story there. You know, like nobody knew that relationship publicly was happening. But even just my fears of A, what people would think as our relationship was going on, you know, the things happening behind closed doors, because no relationship is perfect. And what if they actually knew what was actually going on? Here I am, you know, preaching, talking about how to date well, doing my podcast every week. And I'm like, and I had a trigger trauma moment tonight. And that wasn't my finest moment. But then going into the heartbreak and being like, wow, another failed relationship, you know, like as a dating coach, here I am to say like, yep, but another failed one, another one bites the dust, which was my original like fear, you know? So what was that like for you too, being, you know, in the public eye in your church community?
Yeah, I think there is such a temptation that I fell into so often to pretend to be more fine than I was. And I think that we struggle with someone showing their process, even though it's what we beg to see. And I think that's a big part of what we do, is that our world right now is starved for authenticity. And that's a topic of conversation on every podcast has ever been. But we also don't know what to do with authenticity, because it's messy, because process is messy, because you're seeing all the ingredients, but you're not seeing the final product. And to be able to take the steps to the final product, you have to go through a cooking season and putting it together and not knowing what it looks like and seeing the mess that has spilled over. And I think that we say we want that, but then we don't quite know what to do when the people that we put up on pedestals actually show themselves as fragile humans. And I think we just have to do a better job at giving people the space of leadership without actually making them an idol in our life. And that's been something that I've had to go through as someone in ministry, of not just putting other pastors up on these pedestals so when they show themselves as frail humans, then my whole faith is ruined. Because what kind of faith was that then? But then also realizing that other people had put me up on a pedestal. And so I then had this, what's the word? It's a the syndrome of like imposter syndrome.
Yes, yes.
Oh, where, oh my gosh, I can't tell you during my healing journey. And even to this day of how often I feel like a hypocrite. Like it's like I drink my coffee in the morning and deal with my hypocrisy issues. Like it's like a daily thing, because we're human, and because I fail, and because I have very real things that I go through as a 31-year-old single woman, of things that I desire in my life one day. And so do I live up to all that I wish I did? Heck no. That's the truth, is that I've been through heartbreak and I have healed, but I'm also still a human. And you can be healed and still human and that not affect the fact that you're also healthy and that you have healed from something in your past. And just because I do the cha-cha and take two steps forward and one step back does not mean I'm back at square one. It just means I had a bad day. And I think that we have to do a better job at allowing someone to have a bad day without forcing them to go back to square one and prove that they've healed. Does that make sense?
Oh, girl, it's so true. I find that often. And I love Christians, you know, we want to be super positive, but then there's this line where it can teeter into the toxic positivity, which is, you know, I feel uncomfortable just saying, hey, I went through a breakup and I'm having a hard time and I'm questioning a lot, period. You know, like we feel the need oftentimes to be like, cap that sentence with like, but God is good, but I know that he will redeem this, but I, you know, like whatever Christian phrase it is. And we're like, we have to tie our sentences with that perfect Christianese silver bow or whatever. And we can't just say be in process.
Yes. No, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm just like wanting to amen and do a lap of my bedroom right now, because it's so freaking true, is that we want to cap it off with, but God is good all the time. Otherwise, what do we do if we have to ask the question, like, is God good? But we know he's good. We don't have to say it to heal our own anxiety. It's okay to sit with questions. Even Jesus was in Gethsemane and saying, God, if there's any other way, I don't get it. I don't get if there's any other way, then take this away from me, but it's okay. And even he said a but it wasn't, but God is good.
Yes.
But even if I don't understand, it was Meshach, Abednego going through the fire and refusing to bow down before the king and saying, but even if God doesn't, I still won't do that. And even if I never get the answers as to why I had to go through my divorce, which these days I've got a lot of answers from it. I believe that God was saving me from my toxic marriage rather than saving my toxic marriage. And I believe that it's going to help thousands and tens of thousands and millions of people, but it's still in that place of saying, but God, even if that wasn't true and you just decided to save me from my marriage, even if I never get the answers, even if I never get married, even if I never get those heart desires, I still trust you. And I don't have to have the answers. Isn't that real faith when we don't have to finish the sentence with, but God? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, girl. Oh my gosh. And that is what I have found. Like, I can have hope knowing the future expectation of good, just knowing God's character. Like, he is a God that is redeeming. He is in some way. It may not look what I think it's going to look like, you know, but I will be healed in some form or fashion if I press through the pain. It's not if I just cloak every sentence with a silver bow and just pretend that God is good and that I'm not actually experiencing pain. Like, I can know God is good. And like, I love what you just said, but I don't have to say it to know that it's true. Like, it kind of diminishes just your process. We need to allow ourselves to sit in the pain. And I remember my last breakup, like, I mean, I had to. I literally remember texting my assistant and just canceling all the things and was like, I'm off the grid. Like, bye. Bye to everybody right now. And not in a way that was numbing, but in a way that I was like, I need to go literally be with God and process the pain, because I feel so stunned right now. And to your point, the answers weren't there. You know, that it didn't make sense in that moment. It was very confusing. I really had seen a future with this person in this specific case. And, you know, the answer, I was like, what does it look like to not know all the answers, but sit in the pain and invite God into the pain with me, you know?
Mm-hmm. I guess, and then the next thing is, then what do you tell people, isn't it? That's the, once you and I get real, then what the heck do I tell people? Because when you're in a position of leadership and in a position of influence, then it becomes about, well, I don't want to drag this person through the dirt, but I also don't want to drag myself through the dirt by not saying anything. And it is a messy world of information. We've never had more information than we do now. And yet for some reason, it is an endless pit where we always want more information. We always want more details, whether it's about someone's breakup or about the Bible. We always want to know everything. And it kind of, I mean, don't get me started on the knowledge of the tree, the knowledge of the law and all that kind of stuff. And more information does not mean that we sleep better at night. The drug addiction will tell you that in our country. But anyway, but I think that was a big thing for me. And girl, I love the fact that you went to Mexico. Did you tell people that?
No.
I love that you did that. When I went through my divorce, I came back to Australia for 3 months. And I felt like that there does need to be a season where people give themselves permission to step away from the platform in order to grieve and heal properly, because that platform is sometimes the easiest place to hide, whether it's in a pulpit, in front of a camera, on social media, whatever someone's platform in their life looks like. And trust me, everybody has a platform, even if they don't have a blue check next to their name on Instagram, you still have a platform. And it's okay in seasons of grieving to walk away from whatever that is in order to grieve and heal. And I mean, you went, your off the grid moment of texting your assistant. I ran away to London for 3 days.
Oh my gosh, I love London town.
A friend of mine was going to London. She was like, you're coming with me. I went and I was like, see ya, screw the world. And that was like kind of my rock bottom running away. And then I did my proper running away to heal in Australia. And that was the helpful one. But I understand. And people that know that will be probably laughing or smiling, because everyone can think of their rock bottom running away moment. Yes. And then everyone can think of their healing running away moment to be able to run away, to be able to come back. But that London one, running away to come back. I was running away to run away to the circus. I don't know what I was doing.
Oh, girl. Well, I actually wanted to touch on that for a minute. Just the things that we do to avoid facing the pain of the heartbreak, because it's really easy. I think for me, I'll just speak to the ones I knew that would happen if I didn't leave and go to Mexico. So what happened the week that this guy broke up with me is, like, first of all, we were supposed to go on a trip together to see our families. So that sucks. So literally 3 days before.
What's happening?
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. Great. But then also my roommate left that same exact week. Like, she moved out.
Right.
Yeah. And so the two people, this is COVID, the two people that I saw the most for like 8 months, pretty much, wow, were suddenly gone. And so I was like, wow, I could stay here and not go on the trips anymore because it's not the same. And I could not have my roommate here and not see anyone because of COVID. And this could be really depressing. Or I could do something for myself. Because if I had done that, I could just imagine I would be binging some sort of rom-com and crying my eyes out and drinking wine and just feeling very bad about my life. Okay. Or I could find myself, and this is another way that I numb out when I don't want to look at my pain, is through working and perfectionism and presenting, like, get on Instagram the next day and be like, hey, everyone, or just, you know, whatever it is. Back in the day when I was...
To know that you need to break up with somebody and then it's like all about secretly about your life. Like, we do that. We project those things.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. And when I was going through an abusive relationship like 8 years ago, the same thing. I worked in fashion and I would like show up at the office with my hair done, the lipstick on, like everything. I was like, well, at least I'm good at my job. Like, this mm-hmm. makes me feel a sense of, you know, instead of dealing with this pain, I'm going to like numb out by just working a lot, being a workaholic. Yeah. And so what is it for you? You're numbing when you don't actually go into the pain.
I think that for so long, I numbed out through ministry, honestly. And I numbed out through, I knew what I was good at. And I knew that I was good at helping people. And so quite often, the most guilty of us is the ones with their own savior complex, which I can tend to have. You know, they say that ministry and doctors are like, I'm not a doctor, don't worry, guys. But like ministry, we definitely can. And you're in the business of helping people too. So I, and as a three, are you kidding me? Enneagram three, I relate. Like if I can't be married, then at least I can achieve crap. Like if I have a broken heart, at least I can stay busy. And it was always the at least I can. And it was the validation through the at least I can, whether it was at least I can get a date, at least I can get matches on online dating. And even though I would never actually go out with them because I was terrified of having a relationship after rejection, which is a whole different story. They should read your book if they want some help in that area. But it was always the at least I can. So at least I can preach. At least I can gather a crowd. At least I can get more followers. At least I can be healthy. Oh, girl, my like rejection body was so banging. It was crazy because it was, even if like I'll show him. And what I didn't realize until therapy and Jesus, which was the two things that I would tell anyone, therapy, Jesus, and good community. That'd be those three things, because it took those things for me to realize I can have a banging bod, but it's actually not going to fix a broken heart. And actually getting a six pack of abs while ignoring a broken heart is like putting a Band-Aid on something that is bleeding out. And it is more dangerous than it is good, because it's more denial than actually dealing and facing with the hurt that I was feeling. And that doesn't mean I couldn't have a good body. That didn't mean that I couldn't be healthy. I'm a yoga teacher just for fun, because it healed me and helped me so much. I believe in health, body, soul, and spirit, but we can't have one without the other. And true health is not health if it neglects one of those three areas. And so for me, it was having to deal with some of the lies that I believed through heartbreak. And my lie, everyone has a lie, right?
Oh yeah. Let's talk about the lies.
Yeah. My worst lie from my heartbreak was that I was easy to love and easy to leave. So for me, it was this feeling of, I knew I was easy to love. Like, come on, Enneagram three, right? We're very good at the first impression.
Yes.
That's why I was
on
an effort. But like, we got past that. I believe that's why we have a longer lasting friendship, is because we got past the front. But I'm very good at first impressions. I know I'm quite good at making a good, I'm great on a first date. But I started to believe that if someone really got to know me, even if I was trying hard to be authentic, I even started to believe that I wasn't authentic. So what my ex-husband would do through his abuse, which it was abuse in a lot of different areas, was that I started to believe that I was a narcissist. I started to believe that I was actually so easy to leave because I was so fake. And when you start believing you're fake, when you start believing somebody telling you that you're only in it to gain whatever, you start to become a shell of yourself because you don't know who you are, but at least if you're quiet, you won't be fake. And so it took me so much therapy for me to realize, girl, my therapist will tell you, I walked into her office the first day and said, hey, so I think I'm a narcissist. So I need you to run some tests and we need to figure out how to manage this. And because apparently you can never heal from narcissism. So I don't really know what this is, but I'm pretty sure I am one. And she just was like, okay, take a breath. And a few months of therapy, my very last day with her before I moved back to LA, she said, Elise, you asked me in our first session if you're a narcissist. And she was like, well, how do you feel about that now? And we started laughing in her office because what I was able to do through that process was realize not only was I not a narcissist, but I was being abused. And that's what gaslighting is. But part of that was that I believed the lie that I was easy to love up front. So a lie will often have a spin of truth on it. Easy to love and very easy to leave. And so the thing that came for me was this fear of abandonment and this fear of rejection that came out of being left and really having to go back and heal that. But that was my life. What did you have? Had a worse life?
To be honest, very similar to yours. Also, I just want to laugh for one moment at the fact that if you actually were a narcissist, the funny part about that is if I was your therapist, I'd be like, a narcissist would never come in here and be like, I think I'm a narcissist. Like that is like counter to what a narcissist would do. They would come in there and be like, I'm fine.
To be like, hey, I think I'm struggling. Like it's the opposite job description of a narcissist.
Yes.
If I was one, I wouldn't be a very good one.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't be very convincing to me, my darling. Even just going to therapy, I'm like, oh, praise God. She's willingly going to therapy.
And that was my biggest thing was as soon as I go back to Australia, I told my dad, okay, I need to get in. I knew exactly who I wanted to. She was a psychiatrist and I heard incredible things and we already had a relationship with her. I was like, get me straight into therapy. I need to start this healing process. And then I need to figure out how, you know, how I deal with my narcissism and how to get help and how to really heal. The same reaction was like, a narcissist doesn't ask that question. So if you're asking the question, then you're fine.
I think we're okay here, but we can run those tests if you really want to. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Well, whatever tests they were.
Let me ask you, is there something interfering or preventing you from really being in a healthy dating relationship? I don't know about you, but for me, dating has become a huge eye-opener of things in my life that I personally need to reflect on, heal from, and grow in. It's like when you start dating, the floodgates of past things come bubbling to the surface. It's like, okay, gotta deal with them. Anyone else feel me on this? Now, instead of being afraid of those things, what's helped me through this process is not only mentorship from other peers, but actually going and seeking counseling. Y'all know what I'm saying, therapy. Now, many of you guys ask me for therapy resources, and the issue is I don't know therapists all around the country, but I found a solution. Today, I want to introduce you to something I know you're going to love called Faithful Counseling. Faithful Counseling is a Christian-based online therapy service. They're going to assess your specific needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist that is the best for helping you through whatever you're going through. The best part is, it's a solution for anyone who wants traditional mental health counseling, but wants it done from a Christian lens. That's especially why I love this service. And get this, you guys, you can fill out your needs and start communicating with a therapist in under 24 hours. That means get off here right now, fill out a form, and start communicating with someone tomorrow. And for my listeners not in the US, you guys, this is available worldwide for you. Let me tell you, I have been doing therapy from the comfort of my home since the beginning of 2019, and it's been a game changer for me. You can show up in your jammies and feel super relaxed. You can log into your account anytime and send messages to your counselor, aka when you're having a down day, and you can expect a timely and thoughtful response. If for any reason you need to change counselors, you can do that for free. Now let's talk money, 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 because I know you guys are thinking about it. One of the top reasons I love Faithful Counseling is because it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and there's even financial aid available. So good for all of us single dating people on a budget, you know what I'm saying? Now, I cannot be more thrilled to share this with you guys today, and right now, for Heart of Dating listeners, Faithful Counseling is offering you 10% off your first month by visiting faithfulcounseling.com/heartofdating. Therapy is hands down one of the best decisions I've ever made for my life, you guys. You will never regret investing in your own personal growth. So I highly encourage you to check it out and get 10% off your first month at faithfulcounseling.com/heartofdating. Oh my gosh, Elise, we are so similar, hence why we're like such good friends, because really? My biggest lie is very similar, and I wrote it down in my book, actually. It's that I'm good, but never enough. Meaning, like, someone likes me, they like they like the idea of me, very similar to you. They like very good impressions, they like my joy and my expressiveness, they like that I have vision and that I'm a successful woman, but then I have the feminine side and the fun and playful side, and like, there's a lot of people who at first are like, wow. Wow, they really like the idea of me. They like the concept of being with me. But what my fear is, and it has happened in past relationships, is then they get to know me, you know, and then they see the other parts of me. They get to know my story. They see that I have a lot of trauma in my past. There's triggers. And so when they see all of that, and I actually think of this to a past relationship where in the beginning it was deep infatuation. This guy thought I was the bee's knees. And then as he saw through the months, you know, he got to learn about my family and my abusive situation, divorce in my life, and just a lot of different things I had been through. And actually, he was the first person that found out that I had been raped, because I found that out during that time when I was dating him. Wow. I had compartmentalized it for so many years and never called it that until I was dating him. And so all these things are coming up. And what I say about that relationship, which sealed this lie for me back then to up until this point, because I've healed through this lie, but I pictured it as like I was this present, like this perfect present on the outside, something he was so excited to receive and was like, I can't wait. But then when he opened the present, it was not what he wanted inside.
Right.
And so that this lie started forming that I'm good, but never enough. But they like me in the beginning. They like the idea of me. But once they really get to know me, they're like, oh, no, not this girl.
Yeah. And that was a big thing for me, was that my ex-husband, I was the preacher girl. I was the pastor. I was the pinup girl for the fairy tale. And that was part of what I struggled with, is because he fell in love with the image, but he couldn't handle the girl. And I think that that's the biggest thing in relationships, is I thought that was my fault. And that not enough thing, girl, that's been my life, has that you either feel like you're too much or not enough. And so you're always striving for one end of the spectrum. So no wonder you struggle with balance, because you're always trying to be something on both extremes and wondering why you're so exhausted, is because extremism only leads to exhaustion. But we were never taught how to be accepted in the middle. And I think that was the biggest thing, was that I had to learn. So even going back to the beginning, our conversation about between media and ministry, I'm in a season of still working through and still getting healthy at how do I be in the gray? How do I be in the middle? And how do I be the girl with the influence and also the girl with the issues? Because you're allowed to be the girl with the influence, but what happens when they have the girl with the issues? Well, I'm also both. I'm a pastor and I'm a person. I can be someone's hero and I can also be a human. You're allowed to be the dating coach and the girl, Kate. And it's the man that can accept you, and not just accept you and definitely not tolerate you, but the one that embraces both the girl and the woman on stage, and the figure that you are, that's the one that gets to keep you. And that, I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of people can idolize you, but don't know what to do with your issues. And they're the ones that don't get to stay very long.
Oh, girl. Yeah. I mean, let's just everyone pause and take notes on that for a second. Thank you.
I'm taking my own notes.
No. And it is so, it's interesting, because even if somebody says these things to us, it doesn't make them true. I had a recent ex who did say, he was like, yeah, well, I thought you were so amazing to begin with. You know, you were all these things and you were a dating coach. And I'm just like, she's going to date well. She knows how to do this thing. And then he says the line, but then I got to know you.
Ew, I already know who you're talking about too. And bye. See ya.
Yeah. And I'm like, what? But okay, so here's that we're humans. We can be a hero and a human. We can be somebody that someone looks up to, but we're also human. So we are both now single and 31. We're both the same age and single. Hello, everyone.
We're okay. It's fine.
Yeah, we're fine, everyone. We're good. Let's talk about it honestly. Do we fear that heartbreak will happen again? Do you fear that heartbreak will happen
again? Of course we fear it, babe. Of course we freaking fear it. I vacillate between fear of heartbreak again and fear of never finding anyone. And I think that's the real honest, humble truth, is it's like, when I find someone, then I'm scared of being hurt by them. And then on the days that I don't have someone, or in between connections or whatever it is, or relationships, what do we call them these days? Situationships,
yes, relationships,
whatever they are. Yep. then it's that, hey, God, I'm going to find someone, right? And I think if we're honest, that's the secret whisper at the end of the day is, hey, God, have you, is there someone for me? And I know I don't believe in the one. I definitely do not believe in that. I think that's a lie. But you do wonder if there's a one. And it is that honest, like, hey, God, is there a one? And it's crazy because I do believe there is. And I believe that I'm closer to him today than I was yesterday. And I believe that he's looking for me just as hard as I'm looking for him. But that doesn't stop the questions. And I think that if we try to push away the questions, then it's just the same as us running away from the issues. And I think that God can handle our questions, and being curious rather than shutting something out is the best way for me to deal with the fact that I'm like, no, I know I'm going to find someone. And it's also okay to say, and I'm excited for that day. And I do get lonely sometimes. And while my friends are amazing, I don't want to make out with my friends. Like,
free.
You know?
Yes.
So I don't want to make out with Kate. I love you so much.
I know. Like, but I just love you as a sis, girl. We can hug all day long, though. Hug all day long.
How do you feel? Like, how do you feel being single, especially as like a dating coach that's obviously helping other people find love?
Yeah, I would say, for me, what I've actually really appreciated lately as I've started to venture back into the dating scene is what I have really appreciated is when guys say like, hey, I know you're a public figure. I know you are so vulnerable. You have all this stuff out there on the internet, and I'm going to refrain from like looking at some of that stuff because I want to just get to know you and your heart. Because what happens is, like, first of all, it's weird when somebody knows every one of your stories and you're like, but okay, like there's a part of that feels a little odd. But then the other part is they start like thinking of you in a specific way. And I can go on an episode and talk powerfully or do a talk and like be empowered, but doesn't mean like the reason often why I'm so empowered in these talks or anytime I do an interview is because like I'm still preaching it to myself because I have to feel, I'm feeling those things and I've felt it and had to try to even claim those things, maybe even that morning. You know what I'm saying? And so do I fear heartbreak still happening? Yeah. Yes. I mean, I would never be like, yay, another heartbreak, you know, like, no.
Do this again. And I put that on my mood board for 2021.
Right.
No.
Right. Well, I'm looking at my mood board right now. Heartbreak is definitely not on there. Thank you, Lord. It's just, for me, it just comes into honesty, honesty with the person, honesty with myself, and recognizing the process. Like, hey, risking for love is the greatest thing we can ever do, but it also is a risk. You know, there's always a risk that you will get rejected, that this won't go as you desire for it to go. But I come back to this too. Like, if I can come back to, like, I know that God has good plans for me and that this person I'm dating, I want something amazing for them too, as my brother in Christ, if we break it down to that level, you know, like if it's not me, if we're not meant to be together, like I genuinely want what's best for me and I genuinely want what's best for them. So it helps me to step out of myself in these moments of heartbreak. First of all, to say, A, I have experienced it so much that even though it hurts, I know I'm strong in the face of heartbreak today. I know I can be, you know, like I've proven it to myself. I've gathered tools. Doesn't mean I don't feel it. Doesn't mean I don't cry my eyes out. Doesn't mean I don't have doubts and questions. And you should have seen me in Mexico, everybody, in my journal. But it means that I know that I can see so many times where I've walked through the fire that I know that I can do it. Yeah. You know, like it's the difference between being powerless and powerful, like knowing I'm a powerful person and I can tap into that strength. Again, I don't love it, but I can do it. I can find that adrenaline push, right? So I think for me, it's that, and just being honest, like with myself in those moments, recognizing the fears that are coming up and getting curious, like you said, Elise, like, why is this fear coming up right now? Is it because there's something I need to address or heal here? Or is this just, okay, this is just an indicator, but I'm not going to let that rule the situation. I'm going to keep being open with this person. Is it my gut telling me there's something off here actually? And that I should listen to it, you know? So
absolutely,
I think the fear of heartbreak, I've said this before, can actually be a good thing in some sense, because it's telling you something. I don't think we just need to squash it. I think we need to get curious with it and ask it like, hey, what are you trying to tell me right now? Is there something that I can learn underneath that?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that so much because I think that I love what you said about that takes you from being powerless. And I think if we feel like we're out of control, we start to believe the lie that we can't control anything and therefore we let everything go to crap. Like, but there are things that we can control and just, and you in taking, that's what I had to do during my divorce was there was a moment that I hit rock bottom that I'm writing a proposal for the book right now for the book about my divorce and heartbreak, how to tell the truth on purpose. But rather than accidental truth that accidentally sneaks out of your life, but because you've been avoiding it so much. But anyway, that's a whole different issue. But I remember healing and going, being in Australia and taking my power back. And taking my power back meant realizing that I couldn't control everything, but that didn't mean that I had to lie down and say, woe is me. I guess the rest of my life is up to the universe and blah, blah, blah. No, God has given me some things that I can control. And I think when everything's out of control, we actually sometimes the victim in us wants to believe the lie that everything's out of our control. Therefore, we don't take responsibility for everything. Was the abuse in my relationship my fault? Absolutely not. Abuse is not my fault, but the pain it caused is now my responsibility to heal because that's no longer hurting him. That's only hurting myself if I refuse to heal those areas that have been hurt. And so while it's not our fault, while a breakup is not our fault, then we do have responsibility though to be able to take back our power. And for me, that meant controlling what I could. That meant getting a morning routine. That meant running every day to get my body back strong. That meant doing my journaling and reading my Bible and praying and actually being honest with God and going to my therapist and having a daily routine. I couldn't control everything, but the things I could control, taking back that power meant taking my power back.
Yes, girl, you're tapping in exactly to something I talk about in my book, which I call victim belief system. And I abbreviate it to just be VBS because we all remember VBS. And it's just, the VBS, but this is adult VBS. Okay. This is not Vacation Bible School. This is the victim belief system. And
thinking BS is another thing that I would put there with the BS, but that's fine.
The victim BS. Yes.
Oh victim God. BS, girl. Stop with that victim BS.
Oh my God. Honestly, that's hysterical.
I can be a church kid, but I'm still from Australia. So
I love
whatever.
You. That is amazing. I'm never going to forget that now that when I read these words, the VBS. But that's it. The difference between believing like, okay, that everything is out to get me, like woe is me, that I'm never going to find secure and stable love, that nobody is ever to be trusted, that no one's ever going to love me or that I'm too messed up or too broken for somebody to want to be with me or to choose me. Like, I think it can be comfortable to stay in that place. It feels really validating, you know, being a victim can feel really validating. Like, oh, but like, you know, it comes back to, I love this in New Testament, the paralytic man at the pool of Bethesda. And he's laying there for 38 years and Jesus comes over to him and he's like, do you want to be healed? And the man, you know, his first response isn't like, yes, please heal me. His first response is rather like, oh my gosh, but nobody has helped me get into the pool. And it's this complaint and it's really easy to just lay there. But And Jesus is like, get up off your mat and walk. He didn't make him do it. He didn't even like extend a hand. He was like, do it, brother. You like take ownership and get up. And I think that's a moment where we have to say, to your point, Elise, like we can't control what happened to us. I can't control if I'm paralyzed, if I am abused, or if this person broke up with me. I certainly don't want to beg them to change their minds because that's not going to feel good. Woo. And I've done that before. FYI. Definitely tried that out. Don't do it, everyone. Doesn't make you feel good.
Listen to both of us on that one. Yeah. Don't beg anyone to be with you.
Yes. I say it now that what I desire in this new concept is that I want a man whose heart is ignited to pursue me and to be with me. And I also want my heart ignited to pursue that person through the good, bad, and ugly, no matter what I see. And if this person is not choosing that for whatever reason, I'm not going to convince them otherwise, because what that would do for me is just actually lead me into more insecurity. I make one wrong move. Oh my gosh, is he going to leave me? Fear of abandonment, all the things, right? That is not a life you want to lead. Performing to be a wife, woo, done it all, y'all. And no. But when we can shift the VBS, it means that we know that we are a powerful person and the only things in our control are how we show up in our lives and what we allow to rule us and our healing process. And the VBS, again, it feels validating, but it will keep us stuck and it will keep us from stepping out there and risking love again. But if you don't risk for love, like, it could be the greatest risk of your life. Yes, it's a risk, but it could be the greatest risk of your life. So why not take it, you know, instead of living under the vision?
Isn't that the you're going to risk either way? You risk either for love or you risk not for love. And either way, it's a risk. I think I would rather risk it for love any day, because at least the reward is that I get love, rather than when we think we're not risking anything, we're actually maybe risking the most by saying, I'm too afraid to do this, so I'm not going to step out, means that you stay exactly where you are. And that's not a risk that I'm willing to take, because every single time I've stayed in the boat of safety, the boat of comfort, the boat of fear, the boat of fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, fear of people pleasing, all of the fears, all of the things, then that risk, it never pays off, because you're not gambling anything. And when you don't gamble anything, you're at least sure that you're not going to win.
Yes. Oh, that's so true.
Out, but even Jesus was mad at the person. Like, he told the parable of the different talents, and the person that had one talent sat on it and was like, well, I didn't do anything. Cause that sounds like a terrible voice for me to be using. Well, I didn't do anything. But like, well, I got scared. And we've all been that girl that said, oh, I've only got this left in my heart, so I don't want to risk that because I'm afraid of getting hurt, not realizing that, like, that's the biggest risk of all, friend, is not risking something, because you're definitely not going to get what you want that way. Whereas at least I know if we're risking for love, even if I'm afraid of getting hurt. You know that movie, He Just Got That Into You?
Yes, where Gigi just watched it recently.
Okay, where Gigi is like, well, you know, I'm going to get hurt, but one day I'm going to find love.
Yes, yes.
For this, for sure. You're never going to find love that way. And I know I do. I risk it. And I know that you do too, Kate. You risk it, and we get hurt, and we have embarrassing stories, and we have moments where you'll call me or I'll call you and I'll be like, oh my God, girl, guess what happened? But at the end of the day, I know we're closer to finding love than the Elise or the Kate from a few years ago that wouldn't have done anything. And so I think at the end of the day, the person that might be listening to this that is feeling a little sad or a little lonely or a little bit heartbroken or a little bit rejected, you got to know that when you risk it, you're closer. You're closer to that person, and you got to keep risking. And I know it's painful and I know it hurts, but when you hurt and you heal, then you learn something that you wouldn't have known before. Now, don't hurt, then hurt, then hurt, and not get healed. Like, that's why we take time out and we take time for therapy and for good friends and to, you know, not be on a search for validation. Don't be on a search for validation, but it's okay to be on a search for love.
Yes, girl. That is it. And I think at the risk of sounding cliche, as we press into the healing and as we feel the pain to heal the pain and all of that, like, there is actually a gift that rejection is protection and redirection. And yeah, we will see that through time. So even in my last rejection, my last heartbreak last year, I was like, okay, God, don't know why the bump this happened, but I know you will come. I know that there's some protection in here. I know that there's some sort of redirection in here, you know, and it still means I grieved what I wish I had. But if we can look back in our life, a lot of times what happens in the wake of heartbreak is we are so stuck in that pain that we go into the God is not good mentality. And what I like to just remind people of, and what I try to do for myself, is let me think back to a time that God did come through in some way, you know, like, let me just remind myself, not just by looking at the Bible and all the stories, which we can do that and read it. But sometimes we're like, but is that true for me? Like, I love that he did this for all these people, but like, what about me? You know? And there, I guarantee if you look back in your life, he came through in some way through time. And if you haven't really processed that, I think it's a really big moment to process it, because now when I look back and I go through rejection, I'm like, okay, I want to remember and put a stake in the ground for the moment where I know that God did come through. It may have taken a long time, right? It is 8 years after my abusive relationship, and now I'm just fully sharing about it and wrote a book about it, right? That took a long time to really heal. Yes. And 3 years after that, I was still in a really rough spot. It took me 3 years to really heal through it. And even today, some things still come up, but now I'm seeing how he's redirected me, right? I started Heart of Dating, this whole thing today, through a heartbreak of a man I thought I was going to marry. And if that heartbreak hadn't happened, I don't think I would have started Heart of Dating, to be honest.
Yep.
So
yep.
The cliche is that, yeah, the rejection will be, is protection of some kind, even if you don't see it in that moment, and it will redirect you somewhere.
Girl, yeah. My dad told me this. He said, Elise, I think that the gift that you got from your divorce was your wholeness. And I don't know if I would have found my wholeness had I not been through my divorce, to be honest. I wish I could tell you, girl, that I would have. And I don't know what the future would have been like. But I honestly,
it took me going through a divorce for me to hit that rock bottom place that I couldn't go any lower, and that finally I was had to be honest with myself. Because here's the thing, you can filter a lot of things. It's really hard to filter the word divorce once it becomes a part of your story. There's not a lot of ways for you to filter that. And so it forced me to get to a place of, why did I get in that relationship? Why did that happen? What do I need to heal so that I don't just keep running from guy to guy and keep conforming so that someone doesn't leave me, not realizing that I lost myself in the process of trying not to be left? And that's what it forced me to do. And so through my divorce, I got this wholeness. I got a love for myself. I realized I'm a really good person. I really like me. I am a good friend. I do struggle in these areas, but I'm loyal. And so sometimes the gift of heartbreak is the very thing you needed to actually bring you back to yourself. And I honestly think the only way for me to come back to myself was to be left by the person that I was trying not to have leave me. Because then my greatest fear had become my reality, and I realized not only could I get through it, but I knew why it had happened now. And so I couldn't stop people. I cannot stop people from leaving me. I cannot stop you from leaving if you don't want to be my friend anymore. I cannot stop a boyfriend from leaving me if they don't want to be my friend anymore. I cannot stop a job from deciding they don't want me to be employed by them anymore. But you know what I can stop? I can stop leaving myself just to please someone else. I can stop conforming just to get somebody's momentary validation. I can stop saying yes when I really want to say no. I can stop saying no when I really want to say yes. I can step out of the boat and say, Jesus, even if I start to drown, will you catch me? And I think that the gift of my divorce was my wholeness. And so there's always a gift, and you find what you're looking for.
Wow. That's what I was. Wow, girl. And I love what you said too. Like, that is it. That is, I would never say, I wish I went through abuse. Like, oh yes. Like that part of my story, I would not change that part. Like but I wouldn't change the journey after. I needed the journey after. I needed that self-discovery. I needed to look in the mirror and realize I didn't know who Kate was outside of dating and men and validation and relationships. And I needed to go through the depths of my soul to rebuild, to deconstruct, yeah, and then rebuild with God so that I could actually understand who He created me to be once I stopped trying to be what everyone else wanted me to be and whatever guy I was dating wanted me to be, right? And I think what happens when we experience heartbreak and rejections, we have the opportunity to learn more about ourselves and to experience depths of God and depths of sadness that lead to actually deeper depths of joy as well than we ever have known before. And I actually wrote this in a caption today, but when you start going through the depths of when you start fighting through the lies of heartbreak or the lies of rejection that hit you, and you start to realize a lot of this is not even about you. It's about the situation and people and brokenness and humanity. And there's so much that we can't control. And when you start to rebuild like who you really are and who God actually says that you are. And I think pain actually gives us those opportunities in more profound ways than ever. But what I love is that what we end up loving about ourselves will start attracting others who actually love those things too. When we can walk in our life being like, you know what? I love that I'm expressive, and I love that I'm dorky and love Celine Dion. You know, the right people will come into your life and start loving those things about you too. Yeah. Versus you being like, I'm not sure about being loud. I'm not sure about being expressive. I'm not sure about loving Celine Dion. And therefore I'm timid and I don't know. And then I'm attracting people that don't love those things. So then I just compartmentalize them and pretend to be something else, right? And then I feel abandoned. I feel like I abandoned myself in the process. So as we process through these heartbreaks, we realize like, man, there are so many actual things that I needed to heal and learn about myself and love about myself. And as we start to claim those things, it's the things that other people will be attracted to as well. Woof.
Yes. Oh, all the amens. I'm taking a lap. I need a process.
Okay. Girl, as we close, I need to ask you our final question. We could talk for hours. Let's be honest.
No, literally. We can just keep going.
I know, right? You're going to get my final question that everyone gets, which is, what is your final nugget of dating advice for the Heart of Dating listeners?
My final nugget. Okay, what's coming to my brain first? Okay, my final nugget for today is red flags, not a color scheme or a decoration. Red flags are there for a reason.
Oh my gosh.
I could go back to Elise that was dating. I would say, Elise, Stop thinking that red flags are going to be the color scheme for your wedding and girls, start paying attention. They are there for a reason. Don't neglect the red flags.
Oh my gosh, you better preach it.
Way too intense for my final nugget. Do that too.
You need to know what your red flags are. You need to know what they are, my friends. And actually, the previous episode from this, Elise, was a mini-sode that I recorded that's like red flags, how to spot red flags in toxic people. So if you need some help, y'all, go listen to that episode because I just covered it literally last week.
And here's the thing is that red flags, right, that they're not like – and this is going to be a bit controversial, but like red flags are not a no forever. They're just meant to be there as a check. They're not the final X, the final no. But I think we get scared of red flags because we think red flag is another confirmation that this person is another no. We're afraid of another no. But I think a red flag is there for a reason, and it's there to just allow you some caution. And when we get so caught up in someone that we're not willing to look at the cautionary moments, that's when we get, as someone that's been there, down the aisle and asking, how did this happen to me? It's actually because I didn't listen to my gut. It's because I was so focused on being chosen that I wasn't willing to look at the cautionary moments of it. And if I'd gone back and looked at some of those cautionary moments, that could have sold me a whole world of heartache. So I think if we stop for a moment to, rather than saying, is this person going to choose me, say, do I choose them?
Yes,
different ball game we're playing.
That's the powerful moment. It's less of, does this person choose me? And I'm going to have anxiousness and anxiety about abandonment and heartbreak, but rather, wait, but do I choose them? Do I want to be with them? Yeah, the thing is that the red flags are indicators of something and you need to pay attention to them. Don't run away at the first sign of them unless it's like they're really, really, really bad. There are deal breakers out there that are like, yes. But if it's a red flag and it's waving in your face, pay attention. And I would bring it up and see how that person addresses that through time. For sure.
Those red flag conversations will tell you everything you need to know. We're laughing because we've both been there. They'll tell you everything you need to know. And that way, if someone is not willing to have a conversation about red flags, whether they're yours or theirs, and they're not willing to acknowledge their own red flags, and they keep wanting to point out your red flags while asking you to ignore theirs, girl, boy, run.
Bye. Run, boys, run. Also, last note on the red flags, because I love this topic. Y'all, my classic thing was I would see some of the red flags, but I would make it my mission to help them out with them. So that's
oh my gosh, I have some white paint. If we mix that in with that, then that just becomes a little bit orange. I got you. Let me just help you.
Here is your 5-step plan to getting out of this red flag. You're going to go to therapy. You're going to read this book. You're going to do. And what was that? That was me trying to control them. Codependency, putting my identity and meshing it in theirs so that they would change. And then when they didn't change, I felt destroyed. So that is like codependency 101 right there.
my best friend, who's your friend too, Katie and Kate, we love that. I have so many Kates in my life. She sent me this the other day, right? And she said, I just read something that said, I walked away because you were too busy finding faults in me while I was too busy overlooking yours. Let that sink in. Whoop! Oh, Jesus.
Oh my gosh.
Come down to the front. I see that hand. The ministry call right now.
I needed that one right now.
Welcome.
So did a lot of people. Oh my gosh, I love you, girl. If they want to connect with you and all the things, because they're gonna want to after this. I mean, how much fun was this? How do they find you and connect with you, my girl?
They can find me on Hinge. Oh no, I'm kidding.
Yes, you're a single woman. Single men. She is a cute single blonde woman. Australian woman. Please go check her out. Very eligible.
And that's okay. I'm on Instagram, Elise, E-L-Y-S-E. It's just my first name. When I was going through my divorce, I had a friend in a high place that helped your girl out. They can find me there. They can get my devotional with Horatio Printing for God So Love, my 21-day devotional. Or they can probably find me on your page, somebody tagged in a photo, you know, just fun stuff like that. But I'm so happy to be on here with you. Thank you for having me. This has been so much fun.
I love you, girl. I love you. And come back so we can hug in real life.
I'll be the one that gets to ask you questions next time. I'm coming on to like ask the questions of you.
Ooh. Oh, we need a part two of that. That was so fun. Yes, you need to interview me next time. Okay. I love you, girl. I'll talk to you soon, honey.
Bye.
woo, 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 woo. You guys, I literally feel like I want to do a happy dance. I just love that conversation with Elise. Could have gone on and on and on with her because it was just so powerful and fun. And she's just the real deal, you guys. I hope you feel empowered. I hope you feel encouraged. I hope you feel seen. I want you to know that you are not alone on your journey of healing and heartbreak and discovering yourself within it all. I've been through countless heartbreaks and I am still learning so much to this day even. All right, I got to do it once again. You guys, my brand new book, Thank You for Rejecting Me, is out right now. Oh my gosh, it's even available in audio version. So if you like listening to my voice or you want to listen to my book with full expression as I tell stories and encourage you, then get the book on Audible or the audiobook version. You can get it right now and start listening literally like right after this. So would you consider supporting me? And if you do, would you also consider writing a review on Amazon or wherever you get the book? Man, you guys, that would help me so much as a first-time author. So please, I'm going to unashamedly ask for it. Write me a review and give my book to a friend who needs it. All right, y'all, see you next week.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.